Welcome everyone to Girl Gone Frugal Again. I felt like saying it that way because it sounded really cool. I am actually in a coffee shop here in Denver while recording because I needed to get out before becoming a crazy shut-in. And I thought it would be fun to talk to my friend Michelle D'Argento from Fit is the New Poor about what she's doing on her personal finance journey, some huge choices that she made, how did they work out for her, and just all things money. So, hi, Michelle. How are you doing?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. So, tell us a little bit about your blog and introduce yourself for those listeners who are not familiar with you.
Sure. So, about 3 years ago, my husband and I got married. We paid cash before anybody asked.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, we saved for 2 years and got married and had a dream wedding, so it's possible.
Oh.
And when we got home, we found out that my husband lost his job. So we were a week out of our honeymoon and found out he lost his job. And so I was left to support us. Luckily, we didn't have that many bills besides student loans and some credit cards. So we started Fit is the New Poor with the intention of it of being a way for me to track my finances and talk about getting out of the small debt and student loan debt that we had accumulated over the years. But eventually it branched out to more because of when I tried to have a child, we were unable. So we went through infertility treatments, and it ended up costing us a fortune, even with insurance helping. So our debt kind of spiraled as I was writing on this blog. And Fit is the New Poor kind of became the journey of how we were going to get out of debt now that we had a child. And now I'm branched off to another site called everylittlecent.com. And I talk more about parenting and finances there, as well as I trace some of my journey with paying for infertility treatment, paying for my daughter's extensive medical costs that had accumulated in her first 2 years. So it's really just been a journey.
I want to talk about first, what was your original debt, and then how much did it, I mean, for people who aren't familiar with, you know, fertility treatments and things like that, could you share, I mean, do you feel comfortable sharing numbers? Like, how much was it that you initially were paying on for student loans, and then you're trying to grow your family and then had this additional cost? And did it take you, like, did it catch you off guard how much more expensive it ended up being?
Yeah. So our original debt, when we started out, when I started at Fit is the New Poor and really started looking at the debt, was mainly student loans. And between my husband and I, we have 4 degrees between the two of us. And it was around $40,000. So I felt
that's
at the
good
time.
For
it was,
4 degrees.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's pretty average. And then we had probably about $10,000 in credit card debt, which was accumulated because of some family circumstances. We were not heavy credit card users at all before we started trying to get pregnant. So before we decided to get pregnant, we chipped it down to probably $30,000. Some of it student loan debt that we had just decided, okay, if it's an $800 bill, let's just pay that off. We cut down one of our credit card bills to zero. And it was just due diligence, paying it off whenever we had extra cash or whenever we could take on a side job, whatever we could do. So then in January of 2014, so about a year after we had gotten married, I knew that I was infertile beforehand because I have PCOS and endometriosis, which are fairly common for women to have, but the extent of what I have, I knew in advance that I was not going to be able to get pregnant without intervention. And I also knew that as I was getting older, it was going to be so much harder for me to get pregnant and much more expensive. So the decision to get pregnant about 2 years into our marriage was a pretty big financial one because I had been told by 3 or 4 doctors that I would require extensive infertility treatments every year that I would get older.
Wow.
So It's something definitely to think about if you're a woman and you have a diagnosis like PCOS or endometriosis and you are family-centered. It's not to say you should jump into pregnancy or infertility treatments, but it's something to keep in mind that $1,000 infertility treatment bill could spiral out to $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, in 5 years' time. So for me, the infertility treatment costs were covered by my husband's insurance. However, some of the costs are not necessarily covered. And where we got in trouble with is one of my doctors, I'd seen three different doctors at the time. One of my doctors had asked for me to do a genetic testing because of my cultural background, which is also very normal when you do infertility treatment. They want to make sure you're set up to have a healthy baby. And while there was nothing to worry about, I still went ahead and did it. And I made the stupid financial move of not checking with my insurance first because everything up until that point had been covered. When we got the bill back, it was over $7,000 for this one genetic test.
Oh, my God.
And my insurance, after going through negotiations, after putting in claim reports and talking to every head I could get, only agreed to cover the actual blood sample. So it went down to 6,000. And then I called the company and got it down to 4,000, and it just stayed at 4,000. So even just starting off at the very beginning of our infertility treatment, we were hit with $4,000. And then overall, we hit our out-of-pocket costs really fast, which was another 2,500 with our insurance, and then there was another probably 1,000 that came up that wasn't covered but was required for me to do. So overall, we were near, I want to say 8,000, 9,000 for having a baby, and I got pregnant relatively fast in terms of infertility treatment. I know people, sadly, who have spent over 20,000 with insurance covering it. It's a very sad and horrific thing to go through just to be have infertility treatments. But when you add on the cost, it's like a double blow. And a lot of women don't have it covered. A lot of states don't require insurance to cover it. If you work for a small business, it might not cover it. So there's a lot of financial things you need to think about before you go through that step.
Once you were pregnant, and I do want to talk about the fact that not only did you have the cost of just the treatment, but your daughter arrived earlier, I believe, than expected, mm-hmm. and was in the NICU. What,
yes,
in terms of the cost, like how did, so, you know, you go from, you're working on your loans, your student loans, you go through the treatment, and actually I'm surprised at how low it was, to be honest, because I've met people who paid a lot more, and mm-hmm. then your daughter arrives early and is in the NICU, and how, kind of talk us through just the experience of seeing your little one, you know, like the joy of having her, but then thinking, oh my God, this is a lot of money, like, what was that like?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so she was born 8 weeks early via an emergency C-section, which, if you're unfamiliar, means that I was completely under. It's not like what you see in movies where the woman's wide awake for the C-section. I was completely knocked out. I was unable to walk and move for 2 days and was not able to see
God.
Her for... Yeah, for nearly 48 hours, I believe. I could be totally wrong, but this is a whole haze for me now looking back. So the emotional part is, it's so draining. You don't expect to have your baby that early. And then to have a whole bunch of trauma surrounding it, it's just even worse. She was born with breathing issues and with whole bunch of lung expansion problems and just everything kind of adds up. And while this was happening, I'm also a freelancer. At the time, I was full-time freelancing. And I had clients that were looking for their work. So as soon as I was up and moving, I was working because I could not fathom not having income coming in. I think in my head it was survival tactics. I knew that we were going to be coming back and forth between our home and the NICU, which was about a half-hour drive in Chicago traffic. And I knew that I'd be eating out a lot. I knew that I'd be paying for gas more. I knew that her hospital bills were going to be insane. So in my head, I was like, okay, I need to work. Like, I'm exhausted. I'm emotional. I have a daughter in the hospital that I can't see full time, but I still need to get this book out. I need to get these articles out. So that's a lot of things. A lot of times, I think we talk about not having maternity leave, but when you're a freelancer, you're not going to get that 6 weeks unpaid. You really need to consider the emergency situations of how would your clients react if you needed an extra 5 to 6 days, or what if you don't get paid for a month and you have a hospital bill that's outrageous? I think her hospital bills, a normal pregnancy and delivery, would cost with insurance probably between, depending on your insurance obviously, between $500 to probably $5,000.
Wow.
Ours was supposed to be in the $2,500 range, so not that bad. And actually,
right,
we had saved $2,500 for her delivery. But with the emergency C-section, her being in a level 4 NICU requiring oxygen and extra nursing staff, it ballooned out to, when we saw the pre-insurance bill, it was over $1 million. And when we got our bill, it's insane. And when we got back down with the insurance, it was around, I want to say around 6,000 to 7,000. And that was with, we were on 80-20 coinsurance until we hit the 10,000 mark. So we were just a little under it. So it was pretty bad.
One of the things that came out of the situation is you and your husband decided to do something pretty, what I think for a lot of people would consider pretty extreme, you decided to move. So talk about going through this situation with your daughter, the financial component, and then making the decision to do something pretty drastic in order to attack your debt. And
yeah,
I think the other part would be, and was it worth it?
Yeah, so I consider it one of the best financial moves we've made. My husband agrees. About 6 months after we've had my baby, we were looking at our debt, all the medical debt, the infertility treatments that we were still paying for on top of our student loans, and the credit card debt that we had racked up from going back and forth between the NICU and home. Our debt had ballooned out to around $60,000, and all of a sudden we had credit card debt, which we really never had before, and it was devastating. And we were living in Chicago, but we were living very modestly. We were living in an up-and-coming neighborhood. Our rent was only $1,300 for a two-bedroom, two-bath. We really weren't living outside our means at this point. And my husband and I were making a good amount of money to live that kind of life. But we decided that we wanted to change, and we weren't sure how to do it. So my husband thought, okay, well, maybe I'll just see what's out there job-wise. And I was like, you know, just apply everywhere. It doesn't matter the location. We'll make it work if it pays well. So he was offered this job in Wyoming, and we both have never been to Wyoming. I lived in rural Illinois. I have no idea where Wyoming is on a map. Yeah.
I'm laughing because I'm from Colorado, and I've spent
yes.
time in Wyoming, which is a lovely state, but I've been to Chicago and Wyoming, and neither
yeah.
two. It's so different that I don't even – I was pretty shocked when you said that you were considering doing this, to be honest.
Yeah. And really, like, I had justified it as I lived in rural Illinois growing up. I lived very small town life. I can make it work. But what you need to know about Wyoming is it's very isolated.
Yeah.
It's a 5-hour drive to the nearest Target. I make sure everybody knows that before they move here. And you have to drive everywhere, and it's just awful. My town is I think the fourth biggest town in the state, but it only has one Walmart, and that's basically all the shopping I can do. So I live off of Amazon now. But the job offered my husband about $12,000 more a year than what he was getting in Chicago. And we looked at each other at one point, and I was like, do you like the boss? Okay, you like the boss. Okay, do you like the school? Okay, you like the school. Okay, then we can make this work. So we said, we will do this, and we'll pay off $20,000 worth of our debt. After we pay off $20,000, we'll see where we are, and we'll make a decision to stay or to go. And we ended up hitting the $20,000 paid off in October, so a month ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It was such a big deal in our family to have paid that amount, because it was just, I had set that number as like a pie in the sky, like, oh, 20,000 sounds good. Why not? With no intention of actually reaching it. But it worked simply because we no longer have the temptation. There's no restaurants really for us to eat, so we don't eat out like we used to. We're not driving to our family's house because that's 15 hours away. So we're not wasting money on gas. Obviously not having a Target means I don't go and browse dollar bins that often. So we definitely have made sacrifices that have paid off. And financially, we both agree that it was the best move we could have made. That being said, it's definitely a move I don't recommend anyone to do unless they fully thought it out. I don't think we fully thought out the whole rural life and rural lifestyle, especially in an election season. So there's a lot of cultural issues that we've had to adapt to. And having a child as well, it's something we really didn't consider because we had never had a child before. We didn't realize how much we'd want her to have dance classes or go to museums. So while we gave up eating out at our favorite restaurants and saved a fortune, we also are missing out on experiences we kind of expected her to have now that she's at the age where she can do those things.
What are some of the unexpected expenses that have come up as a result of just living a rural life? Like, we're friends, so I know that you do end up driving down to Denver for culture, and that's a cost. And so what are the things that you're paying for that you're like, God, I wouldn't have paid for that if I were still in a big city?
Yeah, and just even flying home for the holidays is a huge expense. We decided because of winter roads in Wyoming, they don't plow here, and it blows my mind because Illinois is like, as soon as it drizzles, there's plows out, but in Wyoming.
Actually, we don't do it in Denver either.
Oh my goodness, what is up with that?
Thing is, it melts. So in Denver, they'll wait until the last possible, like the plows may come out, but their goal is not to really plow unless they have to. They'll plow like the major streets, but they won't do the side streets ever.
Illinois, it melts.
So that's part of what's going on is it just saves money because we know that it will melt in the next couple of days. So why spend the money on it?
Yeah. I mean, Illinois is like, okay, it's snowing. We're plowing now, and everyone get off the streets because they're plowing.
We're crazy.
Well, if you live in a state like Illinois and you expect plowing, don't move to Wyoming or Colorado, apparently. You're not going to get it. And your poor little car that is two-wheel drive will spin out, which actually happened on our way to Denver our first time that we were traveling from Wyoming to Denver. The car spun out, went into a ditch, and we had a huge bill, which we thought, you know, it'd be an easy repair. It was just the bumper was a little dented and just needed to be tweaked. But when you live in rural Wyoming, you have to go get a part, and somebody has to drive to get that part. And that part is probably in South Dakota, 15 hours away. And then you got to pay for the guy to go get the part and bring it back. And now you're talking about 5 days worth of car rentals when this should be a one-day repair at a shop in a city. So that's one example of the cost, unfortunately, that we've dealt with. Food costs are a little bit higher here, too, because of you're living in a rural area, as well as the delivery is going to be added on. It's not as bad as, say, Alaska or Hawaii, but you're still paying a little bit more for things like eggs and milk. And also, like we discussed, we drive to Denver to come home to fly. If we wanted to fly from the Gillette Airport here, it would cost probably, I think, around $500 to $600 to go from our town to Chicago, versus from Denver to Chicago, which could be around $200.
Like, right. Even so with the gas, it's worth it.
Yeah. So I have flown a couple of, like, regional jets back to Denver so I could transfer and go to Chicago or just stay in Denver for the weekend, and you're still adding another $200 on, versus driving there and paying $80 for gas. So it's just the financials of being so isolated. It's something you don't expect. And we have to be honest, where my husband and I have said, is it worth it to get a truck? We don't want a truck. None of us are truck people. But it makes financial sense if we're staying here for the long haul to get a truck. So it's just things you don't think about.
I'm listening to this, and I'm sure there you know, listeners who are thinking, well, you know, you hit your $20,000 mark. Like, do you see yourselves staying for at least another year, year and a half, to just knock out as much as you possibly can, and then moving back to the Midwest? Like, what does the future hold in terms of the financial journey? And you know, it sounds like, to a certain degree, it was worth it, but that there's only, you can only do it for so long.
Yeah. Like I said, it's definitely, if you're considering moving someplace like Wyoming, or just moving because you have a great job offer and you want to hit debt, it's something to think about, I think, in a two-year plan. My husband and I decided October 2017, we'll reevaluate unless something else amazing comes up. So we always said this is 2 years. If in 2 years we don't like it, we can move back. It's okay. We probably would have hit $40,000, $50,000 worth of debt. And now that we're on track for that, I can see that being a huge benefit. But when you have a kid, there's also monkey wrench thrown in of, she's going to start preschool, or she's in high school, or whatever's going on with your family situation, you have to consider. So that's why I think saying 2 years is a good timeline for this. Instead of trying to think, okay, we're going to stay here forever. It's just impossible to do when you move someplace so extremely different from what you're used to. I think one of the biggest takeaways we've had is that, sure, paying down $20,000 worth of debt has been amazing, but there has been a lot of sadness and homesickness and depression attached with our move that some days it's just not worth it, and I would never recommend it. Other days, I see that the dollar amount go down, and I see our bills become less and less, and I think this is amazing, but there are a lot of unhappy days that you need to consider if you're like me and very attached to people and very family-oriented, where you want to be with your family, or if you just love the city you came from. It can be hard to say goodbye when the whole purpose is something like that. I'm not sure if that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense. I think there's just, you know, there's a level of sacrifice that you've took on, and it was deeper than I think you may have initially expected. I mean, because, you know, not spending time with family, that's a huge sacrifice, like not as much time as you would like. Especially when you have a little one and, you know, grandparents and time, that time that you want to spend with one another. I think we're wrapping up, and I wanted to know, what are some of your tips for paying off the debt? Like, what were specific things that you did? Like, yes, part of it was you were able to do just due to lack of proximity to spending, but what were the other habits or tools or resources that you used to help pay off your debt?
Cash windfalls. Oh my goodness. We were lucky this year with our taxes because of all of our medical bills for my daughter. We got so much back in taxes. Probably around 4,000, just because of all the medical bills we paid off last year. So we didn't touch that money. It went straight to debt. It paid off the credit card. We never saw it. I literally had it sent to the credit card company. Yeah. I didn't even want to be tempted with that check. There was also, we got like a security deposit back from our old rental. That went to it. So anytime we had extra money, it went straight to debt. We just could not apply it to anything else. I think we would have been too tempted. We also were very careful about spending on going home. So there was a lot of temptations for my daughter and I to fly home because, you know, I can work from anywhere. My daughter isn't in school, so it's like, oh, hey, cheap flights. Why not fly home this weekend? But we were very careful to say, okay, we are flying home in March for a bachelorette party, in May for her birthday, in June for a wedding, and then that's it. So we were very careful to say, we're not spending more than X on this trip. We'll be working during the trip. My husband worked and did some side hustles. I did my normal business. So we were very careful that any trip we did take was also a money-making trip. We made it well worth our while to go back to Chicago. In one of my cases, going to Philly, I had business meetings there. So we definitely limited the temptation to go back and spend a ton of money. And we also decided that we were going to live very minimally with my daughter. I think we would have been tempted in Chicago to spend way more than we would have had on birthday gifts and Christmas presents. And we just looked at the amount of stuff that we packed up, and we decided this is it. If it can't fit in two boxes, she's not getting it. So we've been very, very careful about overspending for her and overspending on gifts for us to kind of make up for that hole of living in Wyoming and not being by family.
I do want to ask about working with a variable income and how you, like, what were some of the things that you did to grow your income if you were doing that, and just working with that cash flow coming in so that you could pay on things and just stay on track?
So what we did was decide all of our bills, including minimum credit card bills and student loans, were going to be paid out of my husband's paycheck. So we budgeted very carefully with my husband's income. Then for me, I decided the best thing I could do right now is to actually freelance part-time. So I only work 20 hours a week. I don't like to go over that. We put my daughter in a very inexpensive daycare during those hours so I can do the best work I can. And I limited clients very based on how much income they were bringing me and how consistent they were. So if I had a client that was very, like, one article here a week, maybe two the next, I'd unfortunately drop them because I couldn't deal with the influx of income coming in and out. I didn't want to have to guess at that all the time. And it actually paid off really well because everything that I made went towards debt. So I knew client A was going to pay me $500 a month. I knew that I was going to pay $500 worth of debt. It's completely unrealistic to do if you don't have a partner who is working a consistent job. But if you do have the opportunity where you have a partner or a spouse who is working a full-time job to live off of one income and use the rest for debt, it is a great benefit because it's something where I have a goal to work towards. I like to pay off $2,000 worth of debt a month. So I know in my head, okay, I need to do X amount of work. I'm going to do it in 20 hours a week, and I'm going to be done. So that's really helped. And there's been months where I'm like, gung-ho, take on extra projects and pay off more debt when I want to. And that's worked out too. But overall, I think with the inflexible income, with not knowing where your paycheck is going to come from, it can be very difficult to pay down debt like that. So you have to be careful to have that backup plan in place, which is luckily my husband's income. I'm very fortunate, I know.
That was funny. So Michelle, thank you so much. I actually feel like we need to do another episode in October of next year.
Yeah,
because I think it'd be awesome. I think a lot will happen between, good things will happen between now and then. And is there one like piece of advice that you'd like to leave the listeners with before we go?
For me, my one piece of advice for people who are struggling with financials or their debt is to take it one day at a time. I think it's so easy to get overwhelmed with numbers, especially if you're like me and totally not a math person. It's just so easy to look at spreadsheets and go, oh my goodness, what did I do? And to put that on yourself. But just like everything in life, debt is a journey. And it doesn't get better today, and it won't necessarily get better tomorrow unless you win the lottery. So taking it one day at a time and just putting a dollar towards your debt can be so therapeutic. Believe me, I have put literally 60 cents to one of my credit cards. You can do that. You can do that. I totally did that 1 month when I just wanted to pay something extra on a credit card. I paid, I think it was 68 cents.
And why was it 68 cents? Like, what was going on?
That's all I had because of how I was paying off my debt. That was all I had for this one extra credit card bill. I paid the minimum, but I was like, I want to pay just something more to say that I went after my debt, just a little bit. And while I'm sure credit card companies really hate when people do that, I did it online so no one could judge me. And I put that 68 cents in, and I felt so good about myself for just doing something. I cannot express, like, how amazing that was, and I joke about it now. But at the time, I was probably beaming because it was like, I did something today, and it's going to mean nothing when you talk about interest and all that, but it was still something.
That is, I think, one of my favorite stories so far out of all the podcast interviews that I've done. So I think on that, we're going to end it on that note. I absolutely love it. Do, you know, listeners, do something. And even if it feels like the smallest action ever, it's still action. And Michelle, like, you've given me a lot to think about. That was the best. Wow. 68 cents, people. It makes a difference.
You can do it.
So. Yay. Thank you so much, Michelle. And for people who are looking to find you, how can they find you and follow you on online and in social media?
Sure. So my site, Every Little Cent, Every Little, like Tiny Cent.com. I'm working very hard on it, and it should be coming. There's some articles there now if you want to just get a snapshot of what it's going to look like. But you can check it out after January 1st when it will go fully live. With Yay. A whole bunch of content. And like I said, it'll focus mainly on children and families, but you can also see my Fit as the New Poor story there too, with how my family has tackled debt over the past 4 years now.
And can we follow you on Instagram or
So I'm on Twitter. That's where I mainly post right now. And it's at Shelves, C-H-E-L-L-E-S, Sense, C-E-N-T-S. And you can find my Facebook page at Every Little Sense when you search in that little search box. Not on Instagram yet, but you could always find me at MCA Writer, and that's my personal one if you want to see cute pictures of my daughter and occasional DIY projects I tackle.
Thank you, Michelle. I am just so excited to see what happens in the future. Again, I think that all good things are coming, and you're working hard, and honestly, I'm geeking out about the 68 cents. So, and that's the best story ever. That's just like a food for thought moment.